Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 9th of March, 2020, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. And we're joined by David Scott from North of the Border with Northern Exposure. I nearly coughed then, actually, but luckily just managed to hold that in check.
Yes, it's getting increasingly difficult. But we don't need to worry, Brian, because we now know the answer for coronavirus. It is the Russians. Now, we'll be coming on to this in more detail in a second, but clearly there is a lot of hysteria continuing with respect to coronavirus. So let's bring David Scott straight into the programme, David, and say welcome. And well, the stock market not doing so well today.
It's been remarkable. It's actually quite insane. Oil is down 20%, more than 20% in an instant. And this is because the Saudis have responded to weakening demand by cranking up supply and forcing prices down in order to bully other suppliers, it would seem, or some other reason. It's not entirely clear. It doesn't seem to be entirely rational.
Indeed, and the knock-on effect is that the FTSE 100 has collapsed by, well, initially 8%. I think it's back up to about 6.5 or so percent down from this morning. So quite an incredible situation. And something that hasn't been seen since 2008. Mervyn King was on the on Radio 4 Today programme this morning, David, saying that, well, in 2008 we knew how to fix the problem. We knew that fresh liquidity would solve the problem. But this time he said we're not really sure what to do about it.
Well, it's okay. The French have got it sussed. You'll be astonished to hear that the French finance minister has called for massive economic stimulus to shore up the economy. Isn't it remarkable how, whatever the problem is, the French answer is always a massive economic stimulus?
Absolutely. Now, the question is, what's going to happen about this? Because coronavirus stockpiling, according to the Mirror, what each UK supermarket is rationing as panic buying continues. And the image on there is a customer notice. We're saying that due to higher than normal demand, we've been experiencing some product shortages. In order to support as many customers as possible, they're therefore putting limits on the number of toilet rolls that you can buy from the supermarket to 4 packets in one effort. Brian, that's all you're able to get. But we don't need to worry because the Guardian here is saying 9 reasons to be reassured. And they're saying really that the hype over this hysteria is coming from social media. No criticism in this Guardian article for the Daily Mail or the Daily Express or any of the other mainstream newspapers that are pushing this in a really insane direction. But this Guardian article here, which is headlined Coronavirus, 9 Reasons to Be Reassured, gets even better because at the end they say this. This article was amended on 7th of March 2020. An earlier version wrongly stated that, quote, a solution of ethanol, hydrogen peroxide and bleach will disinfect surfaces. It is dangerous to combine such substances. It now states correctly that a solution of ethanol, a solution of hydrogen peroxide or a solution of bleach will disinfect surfaces. David, you seem to be losing it there. And I can quite understand why.
Oh, it's just so funny. Can you explain to me, why does coronavirus mean that everyone buys toilet paper, but the beast from the east means that everyone buys bread? Who decides?
Oh, this is a very good question. Look, on the hysteria, I published something yesterday on the Column website, this article here, Coronavirus, Civil Liberties Once Given Away Won't Come Back. We'll be coming on to that in a little second, but basically, subsequent to this article being published, the government announced the latest additions to the COVID-19 emergency bill. We'll be talking a little bit more about this later on, David, but what they did say here is that the bill is going to have strong safeguards, including sunsetting after 2 years. So what they're saying is that assuming the emergency powers that eventually end up in this bill, and it's not clear exactly what those will be yet, that the bill will have a sunset clause which says that the emergency powers will end after 2 years, assuming they're not used. But there's nothing stated yet what happens if the emergency powers are used. Will we get back our civil liberties once these have been implemented? I suspect not. And really, the point of the blog post on the UK Column website is to make that point. If we allow ourselves to be driven by this hysteria, Brian, and call for the types of measures that the government's talking about, we end up in a dangerous position.
Very dangerous. I think some people are waking up to those dangers. Mike Straw poll that met a lady, spoke to her at the garage yesterday. She quickly was talking about coronavirus and how some of her friends from America are not coming over. And then she said, do you know where I think this leads? And I said, no, you tell me. And she said, I think it leads to a restriction, more and more restrictions and freedom and probability of being vaccinated. Sorry, you have to be vaccinated to travel abroad. So we will see. But let's have a look at what UK press is pushing out at the moment. In line with what you've just been talking about, Mike, the new term is social distancing. We're going to impose social distancing measures. Now, we're not too sure what these measures are yet. The Mail getting very excited about another Cobra meeting. But I get the impression that social distancing is we are going to do as we're told. Now, who's ramping up the hype? Well, back to our old friend, the BBC. This is their front page from earlier this morning. Are they fear-mongering? Well, we think so, because the ticks of the articles to do with coronavirus, and it's quite clear that there's nothing else happening in the world. But of course, we now know that actually it's the Russians causing the problem. And where have we gone in UK? Well, we've gone to this, the setup of a counter disinformation unit. Now, we've already got 77th Brigade. The building in the image is just an advert which popped up, but for a temporary steel structure, I think it's probably ideal for the new government unit. And what's the government unit there for? Well, those nasty Russians are spreading fake news to stoke up the coronavirus panic. The Guardian, of course, we have to bring in because they're not clean either with how they've been reporting. So here's their headline, Cross Whitehall Unit Set Up to Counter False Coronavirus Claims. And we've got a picture of Oliver Dowden, the Culture Secretary, on the front. What did he have to say? Defending the country from misinformation and digital interference is a top priority. As part of our ongoing work to tackle these threats, we brought together expert teams to make sure we can respond effectively should these threats be identified in relation to the spread of COVID-19. So lots of reassurance and a warm comfy feeling from him. He went on to say this work includes regular engagement with the social media companies, which are well placed to monitor interference and limit the spread of disinformation, and will make sure we're on the front foot to act if required. Well, if that's the case, Mike, I'm not sure why we need a new unit set up, because apparently they can do it all themselves.
Well, is it clear that this is a new unit, or is this an expansion or bringing it back into the public mind, the Foreign Commonwealth Office Disinformation Unit? Is this something new?
Well, all they say is that this is going to be run through the Department for Digital Culture, Media and Sport, but they emphasise this Cross Whitehall part. So I would say we had the bones of it already, but now it's being ramped up.
Yes.
So this is a bit more of the article, a lot of detail here, but I'm going to ask people to go and check it themselves. So it said that disinformation is distributed either for the purposes of causing harm or for political, personal or financial gain. So nobody's out there who makes a mistake or has a bit of fun. If you put out anything that's counter government line, then it's for harm, political, personal, financial gain. And then I got interested because I noticed this. It suddenly said a British official said there were fears that countries such as Russia could exploit the crisis and spread fake news as they did during the Novichok poisonings in Salisbury to sow the seeds of doubt. So a sudden change in the style to the British official. And we know that this is not somebody from the Department of Digital Culture, Media and Sport, because if we read on, we get a bit more. So first of all, what the official said, you've got to be on your guard. It's not beyond the realms of possibility they are using coronavirus for propaganda purposes. That's the Russians' modus operandi. Lots of fact there. It's part of the Russian toolbox, discredit the West in terms of how healthcare is responding. Such a move would benefit the Russians because it spreads uncertainty, sows the seeds of doubt and undermines Western governments. And then we get the clue that this is not from the departure of culture, media and sport, because the line below starts, however, a DCMS spokesman said the counter disinformation unit was about being proactive rather than in response to any activity by states such as Russia. So why was the Guardian so shy about talking about who this British official was? Is this somebody from the security services who's pontificating, no evidence, pointing a finger, but doesn't want to be named?
Well, I'll throw a name out into the hat just in case, and that's Andy Price, of course, who is the head of the Counter Disinformation and Media Development Team at the Foreign Office.
Why would he be so shy?
Because he is a very shy man.
Okay, if we add a bit more to that article, this is where it went on. In February, US officials claimed thousands of Russian-linked social media accounts had launched a coordinated effort. So now we're starting in this article to see that the trail to this hype over it's the Russians comes back to America. And it didn't take long to have a look at a few articles to see what we were really looking at. State Department blames swarms of online false personas from Russia for wave of coronavirus misinformation online. So this all sounds as though it's true, but as you get into the article, it actually gets more clear that it's not true. A top State Department official said Thursday that Russia is behind those swarms. And the warning came from this lady, Lee Gabriel, coordinator of the US government's Global Engagement Center. And that was in her testimony to Congress. And if you're not aware of who this organization or what this organization is, visit their webpage. This is it, Global Engagement Center. Here's Lee Gabriel. She's quite a gal, and you'll understand why in a moment. But this is what they are there to do: direct, lead, synchronize, integrate, and coordinate efforts of the federal government to recognize, understand, expose, and counter foreign state and non-state propaganda and disinformation efforts, aimed at undermining or influencing the policy, security, or stability of the US, its allies and partner nations.
Excellent.
Whether we want it or not, presumably. And, excuse me, the lady herself got quite an accolade from the former White House press secretary, Robert Paladino. He said Lee will provide the permanent leadership we've needed to bolster the Global Engagement Center's operations. She'll begin her duties on Monday. This is a few months ago. Lee is a former CIA-trained human intelligence operations officer, Defense Foreign Liaison Officer, U.S. Navy Program Director, Navy F-18 fighter pilot, and national television news correspondent.
Wow, that's quite a combination.
That's quite a combination, Mike. And let's have a look at her, because she's sort of a glowing female top gun. So this is what she's been pushing around media in the States: actors tied to the country, Russia, through state proxy websites, official state-owned media, and fake accounts online were part of an effort to take advantage of a health crisis where people are terrified worldwide to try to advance their priorities. So she's really putting a strong finger at the Russians. And if we go through to the Washington Post on the 29th of February, here we've got a headline: millions of tweets peddled conspiracy theories about coronavirus in other countries. This is the report: 2 million tweets. Some of the horrific conspiracy theories say that the virus was created by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. That's really terrible. Or they were the result of a bioweapon. The Global Engagement Center explored 29 million foreign posts. Some of the misinformation exhibited evidence of inauthentic or coordinated activity, raising the specter that foreign governments or other malicious actors may have tried to sow fear and discord about the health emergency. But the report did not detail what led to this conclusion, nor did it accuse a specific government. And then we find that previously agency officials from this organisation signalled in public news reports that some of the coronavirus related content on social media may be tied to agents of the Kremlin. This was the key statement. The State Department has provided no evidence of links to the Kremlin, to tech giants or the public, and it does not mention Russia once in the document obtained by the Post. So just to break here very briefly, it's very interesting. I'm getting the impression that even the mainstream journalists in the Washington Post are getting confused as to what's happening. David, I've got a bit more to cover, but just a 20-second response. This is unbelievable.
Well, right, agents, suspected of the Russians and agents of the Kremlin. I give you another potential perpetrator here. Public Health England. I've just found out what social distancing is. According to Public Health England, social distancing measures could include things like temporarily reducing socialising in public spaces, such as entertainment or sports events, reducing our use of non-essential public transport, or recommending home working. So basically, you don't leave the house, right? You hide. You're afraid of all social contact. Is that not kind of scaremongering?
It is.
Is that not worse than anything we're seeing on social media?
In my opinion, yes, it is. And this is where we're coming to the real danger of what's going on. There's a story being pushed from governments and the mainstream media. The objective is fear. And the ultimate result, as Mike is pointing out, is close down of social liberties. So let's follow the female Top Gun through. And this is her glowing image on her Twitter page. She likes to spread the names around. So she said, it's an honour to serve alongside these two esteemed diplomats, Ambassador Jim Jeffrey and Ambassador Bill Robock. So all good. But I happen to spot this. Always such a pleasure to have meetings at number 10 Downing Street. Now, if you look at the date, February the 21st, this is 8 days before the American press started to say, what is this lady up to? And we can ask a question now. Did the Russia coronavirus social media conspiracy theory start in the US with the US Global Engagement Center? And I think there's a bit of evidence for this. This lady likes herself and her image. So here she is with a nice selfie outside number 10. But it's not only number 10 that she's been visiting. She's also been into the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. But what's interesting is there doesn't seem to be any wider reports on what she was doing there and what was discussed. Clearly she wants to blame the Russians for everything on social media. But if we go back to the Guardian article, it does give her a mention at the top here. Last week, a senior US State Department official, Lee Gabriel, told Congress that Russia was behind the swarms of online false personas. And if we go through, it's very interesting. The Guardian suddenly puts the finger back at the Kremlin. The disinformation efforts resemble a KGB campaign from the 1980s known as Operation Infection, whose key goal was to plant the idea that the CIA or the US military was somehow behind the AIDS epidemic. That's a fascinating little statement. So we're going to label this, I think, Guardian fake news, spin, half-truths, omissions and hype, pointing a finger at Russia, but a lot of questions to be asked about why this lady was in UK and what took place in her meeting in number 10 in the Foreign and Commonwealth Office.
OK, let's move over to the Netherlands then. And the MH17 trial began today. Now, the MH17, this was a fluke that I managed to get this screenshot of the website because it has been down for most of the day, undoubtedly because of hacks from Russia. Brian, there can be no other explanation for that. So the website has been down. The Foreign Commonwealth Office has released a helpful statement on this. Here it is. On 17th July 2014, flight MH17 was shot down while flying a commercial route between Amsterdam and Kuala Lumpur. The criminal trial that will begin today in the Netherlands against four individuals charged with the murder of 298 people in the Downing and the downing of flight MH17 over eastern Ukraine, and area controlled at the time by Russian-backed separatists. They go on to say the UK has full confidence in the Dutch justice system and recognises that this trial is only possible because of the painstaking dedication of the joint investigation team, whose work we continue to support. The UK has donated £100,000 to help establish the Dutch court. So that should make you feel very comfortable, Brian. This is what Dominic Raab, the Foreign Secretary, had to say. The Russian state must now cooperate fully with this trial in accordance with UN Security Council Resolution 2166. There can be no impunity for those responsible of this appalling crime. So, one of the accused, one of the four accused, has retained legal counsel and was represented this morning. The other three will be tried in absentia, according to the court. They were summoned to attend in compliance with the rules and know that they're being prosecuted in criminal proceedings, but didn't appear in court. So, as I say, three Russians and a Ukrainian being accused. Now, of course, as we highlighted last week on Wednesday's news and also on Tuesday evening when we live streamed this event, MH17 awaiting the trial, not everyone agrees that the evidence supports the official narrative, and the team at Bonanza Media have done a very good job highlighting the discrepancies in the story put forward by the Netherlands and the joint investigative team. Now, that's not to say they're not critical of Russia, because they're absolutely critical of the Russian government, who they also feel aren't giving all the information that they've got. So, but anyway, if you haven't seen the presentation that they gave in London on Tuesday night, it's on the front page of the UK Column website. Go and watch that video. It's worth watching. It includes a little 40-minute documentary that they've produced, which explains it all very, very well. And we'll keep you posted on updates on the MH17 trial as it happens.
Yeah.
Okay, if you like what the UK Column does and you would like to support us, then please head over to ukcolumn.org/community. There are options for helping us out there, and your help much needed and much appreciated. Now, good news, Brian, because the British military is rehearsing evacuations, mass evacuations. In this case, it was a Exercise Askari Storm. This is the evacuation of 400 people, apparently. This is a parachute battle group exercise, the British Army says, and this is part of the British Army's Global Response Force. Involves troops from 16 Air Assault Brigade, and they've been practicing moving 400 people away from danger. Soldiers fanned out, apparently, across the countryside to protect citizens from the UK and allied countries. They are. It's all very exciting, and apparently they managed to evacuate them to a central location where they were then removed from the country, having received simulated medical treatment and so on. Yeah. So that's good.
It is.
What are we preparing for here?
Well, I've no idea, Mike, because I keep coming back to this point. If you look at the size of Britain's military at the moment, we're not capable of fighting any major conflict overseas for any realistic period, more than a couple of months. So what are all these units for? Where will they be working?
Good question. But they can be deployed within 48 hours, so that's very good.
Right, that's good.
In the meantime, one person that we've had to evacuate, apparently, is an SAS soldier who's been wounded in Syria by an IED. And of course, the question in many people's lips is why he was there in the first place. Now, of course, the British government is making the point that British Special Forces have been working alongside US and French Special Forces teams in Syria for quite some time, supporting the Syrian Democratic Forces. This is the Kurdish group, and apparently, allegedly fighting ISIS. Well, I don't think they're making a huge contribution in that direction. And the question is why they should be, or why they are in this in Syria. It's certainly something that the general public still doesn't quite understand.
Well, and we also need to remember that David Cameron said publicly several times that there would be no boots on the ground, military troops on the ground in Syria. But of course, the special forces have now become the cabinet's private army, who can be deployed, and the rest of UK has no idea why, for what reason. Pretty dangerous, really.
Yes. Now, even better news, Brian, because Lieutenant General Richard Nugie has been put in charge of the Ministry of Defence's climate change policy. So this is a new review being launched, which is going to spearhead initiatives within the Ministry of Defence when it comes to tackling the challenges of climate change.
Do you shoot missiles at climate change? How do you get to grips with it in a military sense?
Well,
they're going to evacuate it. There's too much hot air. We're going to evacuate it by...
No. You know, you're completely in the wrong direction there, because we will have what they're calling NZ50. This is the net zero 50 target by 2050. Net zero target by 2050. So you're not going to be allowed to shoot any missiles at all, Brian, because there's a carbon issue there.
Carbon tax.
They're concerned about receding ice sheets, apparently, and having to operate in the Arctic. And under those circumstances, they're concerned about Russian submarine activity. I'm not sure what that's got to do with climate change, but apparently, as the world warms, there's going to be more Russian submarine activity. That's what they seem to be saying there. And they're saying that, of course, they've got to meet their net zero targets. So what did the Lieutenant General say? The effect of climate change will challenge how our armed forces operate today and will need to operate in the future. And we need to act now to understand and prepare for the changes that have to be made.
This is such nonsense, because the armed forces train in extremes of climate anyway. They train in horrific temperatures in the desert, and they train in the Arctic. They do that. They've done this for many years. What is this? This is some political newspeak.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it gets better, because here is the new COP26 president, Alok Sharma. Now, he's, of course, the Secretary of State for Business, Energy and Climate Change. And he spoke at the end. This goes back a week, but they've only published the transcript of the speech. He was speaking at the launch of the COP26 private finance agenda in the Guildhall. And let's just have a look at some of the points that he was making here. Apparently, no one is going to be left behind. So he's saying that leaving no one behind. To achieve this, all countries must commit to significant further cuts to carbon emissions by 2030 and to reach net zero as soon as possible. No one will be left behind. Every country has to do this, whether you like it or not. He was talking about adaptation and resilience. If you want to know about the resilience policy, do have a look at the UK Column website and have a search for resilience there. Promoting nature-based solutions, that's how we're going to survive in the future. We're going to have an energy transition, of course, and that will include clean road transport. This is the killer. We're going to unleash the finance, which will power the shift. So, David, let's bring you back here. We're going to unleash the finance, which will power the shift, because climate change is going to sustain the financial system for the future.
Yes, it's Paul Krugman. Paul Krugman's policy was, what we need is to invest vast resources all across the world in a space alien defence, to defend us from space aliens. And if we all believed the space aliens were coming, the effect would be it would stimulate the economy and we'd all be richer. And then if we discovered there were no space aliens, it's still all good because we have a better economy. He actually said that. This is the same thing, right? Global warming's a myth. It's a scam from the start, but we're going to spend billions on it and that's going to stimulate the economy. Oh, and by the way, on global warming and the army, right, from the weekend, 6 Royal Aircraft jets, well, it says 6, went to intercept a Russian plane that was heading for Donegal. They said the RAF launched 3 Typhoon aircraft from its quick reaction alert, along with 2 pairs of Tornadoes, that's 7 by my count, from air bases in Lossiemouth and Coningsby. And a Voyager tanker, an air-to-air refueling tanker, was deployed to support them from Bryce Norton. So that was, by that count, 8 aircraft to go and have a look at one of the Russian Bear aircraft nosing around Donegal, sightseeing. And that seems to be like an awful lot of fuel. So maybe this man is going to actually make some impact, and maybe just send 2 aircraft.
You're missing the point completely. You've missed the story. Russia is going to invade Ireland in the not too distant future because of all the major cables that are heading into the Atlantic from the West Irish coast, and they want to get control of those communications cables. So Russia is looking at an invasion of Ireland, apparently.
We should say that this is...
This was a serious comment that was made by serious commentators. So that just demonstrates once again the sheer insanity of what we're seeing coming out of mainstream think tanks, government, and media. So anyway, let's change the subject completely, David, and move on to gender issues. And a letter to the editor in the Times, Tavistock Clinic must come clean.
Yes, this is from Michael Biggs, Professor Michael Biggs of University of Oxford. He writes, I salute Keira Bell's courage in leading the legal challenge against the Tavistock and Portman NHS Foundation Trust, the UK's only centre for treating children suffering from gender dysphoria. The Tavistock's gender identity clinic uses the drug Tritoraline to stop puberty in children as young as 11. Tripodidine, I massacred that name, never mind, is not licensed for this for treatment of this condition. My research has uncovered disturbing data from the Tavistock's 2011 experiment with this drug. After 1 year, children given the treatment had more thoughts of self-harm, and the girls experienced worse dysphoria. I hope the coming judicial review will force the Tavistock's gender identity clinic into releasing comprehensive data on the well-being of all children, now numbering nearly 300 subject to this drug regime. Let's hope they do.
Absolutely. Okay, now let's head up to Scotland. And things aren't getting any better at Holyrood.
Well, we reported last week that six had gone. Well, now there's seven. And wouldn't you believe it, it's Aileen also Campbell, our friend, the leader of the named person legislation before it cost her job. And she's back in the cabinet now, and she's decided that, in fact, she doesn't want to be a politician anymore. She wants to spend more time with her children and more time with the family. So she's not standing again in 2021. So that's seven, including, I think, two cabinet ministers that have resigned. That's 11% of the SNP strength at Holyrood have decided that, no, we'll not bother.
Sorry,
David, I was going to say, this is the lady who said not to worry about the named person scheme in Scotland because parents would also have a role in bringing up their children. It's surprising that she would then rush home. Why doesn't she simply get one of her government colleagues to look after her children and she can spend more time in Holyrood?
Well, she is indeed. This is her name is Aileen also Campbell because of that infamous statement that she's never managed to live down. And presumably, I mean, she's got two, I'm sure they're very lovely children, two boys, 5 and 9, and a husband, and I'm sure he's lovely too. And I'm sure they're going to be very happy. And I'm sure they'll also have the involvement of two named persons from the government, because that is, after all, her policy.
Absolutely. Now, what's going on with the Alex Salmond trial then?
Well, it's day one. It's day one of the Salmond trial. This is going to go on for weeks. Now, this is going to be traumatic for many people, including me, I suspect. The Salmond trial started. Alex Salmond has pled not guilty to all 14 charges, 11 cases of sexual assault, one of attempted rape and some other minor indecent assault and breach of peace charges. I've looked at the list today of the charges. I have to say it's a long list. Some of it seems pretty low grade. One or two are not, one or two are more serious, but it's a strange list when you see it. The jury have been sworn in, and the last I heard, because we've got journalists providing live updates from the court, the jury had been asked to go away and decide whether they could try the case on the evidence and not be swayed by any external matters. And they were told to go away and think about this. So the jury of six men and nine women were considering whether they could undertake this task, and we're waiting for what is going to be a great deal of examination of some quite unpleasant and also some quite trivial interactions between Alex Salmond and various women. Mr. Salmond obviously denies all charges. His position stated outside this court when the Scottish Government's internal inquiry into the matter collapsed after 1 day on judicial review, was that he had not crossed the line into criminality. So he said, quote, I am no angel, but nothing I did crossed the line into criminality. So that's going to be his position. And obviously the Crown Office and the police have taken a different view. And we'll see how it all works out. But this is highly politicised. the briefings behind the scenes by very senior SNP politicians is that this is a political witch hunt. That's the sort of briefing that's going on behind closed doors. It remains to be seen how the Scottish judicial system can actually handle this for this trial of what's remember, it's a solemn proceeding. It's in front of a jury. There's a potential of a long prison sentence if he's convicted, and it's the former First Minister of the country. So it's really unprecedented.
What are the chances that the current First Minister of the country, Nicola Sturgeon, is going to give evidence at this trial?
Well, from what we hear, she's very likely to be cited to appear because she obviously had meetings with Alex Salmond regarding this, and she may have had meetings with some of the alleged victims. And there is the allegation that this is a politically motivated prosecution. So there may well be some embarrassing days for Nicola Sturgeon ahead. And it's going to be a long trial. It's going to be extremely detailed, and it will be covered in huge detail by the press, unusually, because it's so high profile. It'll be covered in huge detail by the press and will be followed by the public. And I honestly don't know how this is going to transpire.
Yeah. Okay, now let's come back down south of the border. And, the Labour Party just gets better and better. So they have now suspended Trevor Phillips, who's, of course, a long-time race campaigner, over Islamophobia allegations.
Yes, it seems to be terminal ground contact is the only way forward for the Labour Party. It's just eating itself. So here you have Trevor Phillips, who has always presented himself as paced, well-judged, reasonable and reasoned in everything he's done, in an area which is hugely inflammatory and where a wrong word could cause chaos. He's always impressed. And he's a member of the Labour Party, but he's now suspended because he spoke out about the Islamic rape gangs in the north of England and said that there were men of Pakistani origin involved in raping girls in these towns, which is true. They've been convicted. It's manifestly true. And somehow that now in the Labour Party, in the strange and bizarre world of the Labour Party, that qualifies as some sort of hate speech. And he's been suspended pending investigation. I think it is utterly ridiculous.
Absolutely. And, is criticism of Priti Patel hate speech then?
Well, I contrast this. This is two images I got. One's from The Guardian, where they've taken Priti Patel, who's, of course, Hindu, so this is a bit dodgy, and they've made her into some sort of bull. And she's got horns and she's got a ring through her nose and an angry look. And I contrast this to how some of the British public are seeing it, because the second one's from Twitter. So this is from an ordinary member of the public, right? They've got Priti Patel as Wonder Woman, looking very fetching with a sword and a shield. And the text says, Priti Patel, now that's a Home Secretary. So I simply say that this is The Guardian, this is the mainstream media versus Twitter. And I would invite you to spot the troll.
Yes, well, I think we know which is which. But just expanding on the Priti Patel point for one second, Alan Duncan, there's a video from Sir Alan Duncan doing the rounds at the moment, really giving her a very hard time in what could very well be considered slanderous statements. But, you know, what do you think is behind this direct attack on her, and why are they focusing on her in particular? You may not know the answer to that. This is a purely speculative question.
Yeah, I really don't know, because, I mean, she's only just in the job. There's clearly, I mean, the Home Office has been unfit for purpose for a very long time. Remember, it was Theresa May's brief before, and nothing worked. I mean, she just talked a good job, but nothing actually worked. Things like, you know, mass immigration and all the problems, that continued apace. Nothing was ever done. And there was a lot of errors, and even before the Conservative government, you had on the grooming gangs in the north, you had instructions coming out from the then Labour Home Secretary to say, you know, these girls have made a choice, a lifestyle choice, and the men who are raping them are not to be prosecuted. So this has been a deeply dysfunctional organisation for a very long time. I can imagine there's quite a lot to fix. I can imagine that there, it really is a case of draining the swamp. And if she's even trying to do that, the swamp may be fighting back.
Yes, and just to make the point that, of course, as somebody's just pointed out in the chat box, she also wants to see the grooming gang report released, David.
Yes, I mean, this is one of the things that's been suggested as what might have sparked this. She wanted the grooming gang's report released, and then all of a sudden she was a bully. And some of the things that have been dragged up, like there was someone who committed suicide, I think, and in a previous department that she was in, she was blamed for this, but she only quite, you know, crossed in a timeline with this person very, very briefly, and all the problems that the person had experienced were due to bullying by other members of the civil service in that department, and it was nothing to do with Priti Patel at all. So there seems to have been a really nasty whispering campaign against her, and I think that the view that I see the public taking is it's not justified, and in fact getting into that department and shaking things up is exactly what we need someone to be doing.
Absolutely. Okay, now, more good news, Brian, because here's Eric Pickles, the wonderful Eric Pickles. Well, this is the heavyweight that Michael Gove has chosen to lead the Advisory Committee on Business Appointments. Now, if anybody doesn't know what the Advisory Committee on Business Appointments is, it's independent. It's a non-governmental agency. And it's there to make sure that once you've finished in government and you're no longer a government minister, that you get the best, well-paid job you can possibly get after you leave government. Now, of course, that's not what it's for at all. It's supposed to make sure that there's accountability in the roles that the government ministers take after they leave government. But, of course, it doesn't really do that. So Lord Pickles, 40 years of experience at working in public life, formerly a Conservative MP for Brentwood and Ongar, and Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government. So nobody better to do this job, Brian. He is going to make sure that once people leave government, they are looked after.
Yeah, I've got some concerns about it, Mike, because my mind goes back to David Cameron and Big Society. And of course, Eric Pickles was one of the big driving forces behind that. And Big Society is what we're seeing coming in now with all the controls. But he was also said that he was going to do something about the political charity Common Purpose. And he said that it was a waste of money. No local authority should be spending money on Common Purpose. And he was going to sort it out. But after that initial little bit of speaking out, it all went very quiet. Mm-hmm. And it's clear that he never did anything to root out Common Purpose. David Cameron in bed with him anyway. So can we trust Eric Pickles? I don't think so.
No. And well, we'll just end on the best news of all, which, of course, today is Commonwealth Day, Brian. And the Minister of Defence pushed out this little video clip all about the Commonwealth. It unites 2.4 billion people across the world. It's fantastic. And the Ministry of Defence is very excited about it. But unfortunately for the Ministry of Defence, of course, Commonwealth military veterans who have served with the UK military are not able to stay in the country, and this continues to be a problem that the Royal British Legion is trying to highlight. They say that it's a desperate situation, and this is because visa fees, thousands and thousands of pounds for veterans to maintain a visa to stay in this country. Well, that's all been released on Commonwealth Day, but we should be celebrating nonetheless.
Yeah, it's just fascinating, isn't it? The MOD sponsoring that little video there. So we're seeing that we're supposed to have come out of the EU. Clearly that hasn't happened. But what we're seeing in parallel is ramping up the power of the Commonwealth, and the military aspect is seen as being very important. Is that because of the eye on Africa, maybe?
Well, absolutely. So, David, happy Empire Day.
Well, maybe. You said we'd left the EU. I came across a video of them discussing taxation policy, and I did have a small moment of joy to realise actually we're at least semi out of this now, and all of their plans for grabbing more of our resources don't necessarily affect us, and we've got some distance. And as far as Empire Day, well, I see that the BBC are pushing hatred of the empire and despising our history quite hard now. And it's been pushed into schools and it's been pushed out in the BBC. So it would be quite fun to have an Empire Day and actually look at this much more realistically and much more positively, because we did run about a third of the world and we did it rather well for quite some time. And that time's passed, but we should be able to look at it with realism and to see the good and the bad. And that's not what's been pushed upon us.
No. Indeed. So are we off to buy some toilet roll then? Is that
I think we need some face masks. We need some more soap, clearly, because we need to wash our hands now we've done the news. We're going to say to people a lot more to report on coronavirus, because not a lot is being talked about to do with the laboratory or the virus itself. And we'll see whether we can assist with that. But it's quite clear now that we have a massive mainstream media propaganda campaign, which is going to target anybody who dares to challenge the government narrative. We'll leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll be back at the same time on Wednesday. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.